Now we meet a 32-year-old divorced mother of two in nursing school who's on the upswing out of poverty. Allison Crawford has her story.
Kara Gaskamp sits comfortably on the couch in her simple and neat two-bedroom apartment as she explains her entrance into poverty. Her mother had remarried when she was 7, and the family was well off. Her mom kept a 6-figure income running a private prison and working part-time as a counselor. But her stepfather was abusive. Kara was 10 when her mother drove her and her 2 siblings from Louisville to Paducah in the middle of the night.
We basically had the clothes on our back and we each grabbed a toy. We drove back to Paducah and my mom's family met us and we stayed with them for a while. She did get a job down here, but the job market is not anything like Louisville, so her income dropped significantly. But we were a lot happier, a lot happier.
Now 32, she glances behind us where her 2 children are perched on kitchen stools, listening to her story attentively. Kara's little family may not have much, but their happiness is independent of wealth. At the ages of 7 and 12, Josie and Caden speak with a wisdom many of us struggle to grasp in our later years.
How much money you have doesn't really mean that you're rich. You're rich by how you live in your family, and it doesn't necessarily mean you'll be happier. It just means you'll get to get more stuff, not necessarily more happiness.
I love my mom. My mom takes care of me. I'll be a gentleman, I take care of her.
For Kara, happiness has never been dependent on income. But she tells us that after leaving her stepfather, her family crashed further into poverty when her mom got hurt.
She ended up getting injured on the job in a car wreck. She was a home health worker, and a man ran a stoplight and T-boned her. So she was very lucky to even survive that. And it took a long time to get the workman's comp to kick in. And so that's when I started working and helping pay bills. And I was about 14 when I started that.
How much would you say you contributed to your family's income when you were helping your mom?
Oh, my goodness. Well, from 14 to 18, I worked 40 hours a week, minimum wage starting out, until she was able to start drawing disability. I mean, it was probably like 80%. My grandparents helped as much as they could. My aunt and uncle helped. We got food stamps and medical cards. But yeah, I mean, it was a significant chunk.
And that was the beginning of the delicate balance Kara maintains between falling off the fiscal cliff and just struggling to stay on it. She had enrolled in homeschool at 13, which helped her manage school and work when she became the breadwinner for her family.
I wasn't into sports. I wasn't into the cheerleading or anything like that. I was shy. I liked to read. I liked to be to myself. And I was thrilled to death with the homeschool arrangement. I just pretended like I wasn't shy and just talked to everybody and did my job. And I've worked ever since then. I loved it. As far as school goes, we worked year-round. I did schoolwork at home either before or after my shift, and we worked on weekends. We worked through holidays. I did schoolwork through summer. I ended up graduating in 98 when I was 16.
It was not a typical teenage experience. It was stressful and hard, but Kara feels like she was better prepared for adulthood than any of her other peers.
Honestly, I think I have more of an advantage than a lot of kids that grew up with money. A lot of people have trouble surviving on their own, and they don't, you know, or if circumstances change like mine did and something happens and they've lost that support and that income from their parents, I was used to it. So it's, you know, I can be happier in my circumstances than some people who might not be used to that and be thrust into it and be miserable because they don't know how to deal.
Kara continued to work after earning her diploma. When she was 18, her mom's workers' compensation and disability payments started coming in, making her comfortable enough to feel like she could move out and apply for a job at Western Baptist, where her aunt worked.
I felt guilty because my brother and sister, neither one of them had ever really worked much, so I was worried about what they were going to do, but at the same time, I kind of had the feeling that if I didn't just do it, that I never would. I'd had enough of fast food by then, so I was ready for it. I loved it. Oh, I loved it. I did registration, and I worked in the ER. I worked there until mid-pregnancy with my daughter.
Kara met the father of her daughter, Josie, when she was 19. They had been dating 6 months when she got pregnant. He proposed, but Kara was not interested in marriage. He went with her to some of her doctor's appointments, but then he got cold feet.
He called me at work one night and said that he'd been thinking about it, and he decided that I was going to have an abortion. So I actually think I did laugh at him when he told me that, and I tried to explain and reason with him that he has no role in that decision, that I personally couldn't live with doing that, and if he ever decided to grow up, he could get a hold of me, and I haven't talked to him since.
And does he pay any child support or anything?
No, I haven't requested that. I feel like he lost all rights that night. I don't want anything from him. I got the best part.
Kara had to quit working halfway through her pregnancy in 2001.
That's when I started drawing government assistance for the first time. It was a blow to the pride. I didn't like it. I cried. My mom had to drag me. She's like, you know, if it was just you, I wouldn't worry about you too much, but you're pregnant, you have a baby to take care of, you have to go to the doctor, you have to go.
Her daughter was born with a cantaloupe-sized tumor on her spine. Doctors questioned whether she would survive the first few hours, the next few days, and if she did, whether she would be able to walk or speak.
I had a nurse on her knees on my stomach trying to push her out for me. And the doctor finally felt that, she said, oh my God, there's an abnormality. It was very scary because, you know, they're yelling at me to push and I'm crying and saying I am. And, you know, everybody's panicking because they don't know what's going on. But they rushed me to C-section and they said that they waited till I was out. But I remember vividly them starting to push her back in while I was still awake before the anesthesia took hold. I remember. You don't forget something like that. And then when I was still waking up from the anesthesia, they told me that they were flying her out. So I had picked out three names that I was down to three names. I wasn't sure what I wanted to name her. And my mom didn't want her to just be baby girl. So she picked one of the names and it was Jocelyn. So she could have a name in case something did happen. She didn't want her to die and not have a name.
But Josie hung on and today is strong and healthy. Kara was not able to work for the first year of her daughter's life, as she was taking Josie back and forth between Paducah and Louisville to Cosair's Children's Hospital. Her appointments were weekly at first, eventually leveling off to twice a year by the time she turned two. Kara had to rely on government assistance and help from family and friends to make it through the first few years. She signed up for Kentucky Transitional Assistance Program, or KTAP, which provides financial and medical assistance to needy, dependent children and their families for up to 5 years. Kara's church helped by pulling money to help pay for the frequent trips to Louisville. She also took advantage of programs that help pay for utilities.
I had to access a lot of help at that time, and I didn't think twice about it because I had to. So it was hard. It was very hard financially back then.
Though Kara struggled with the birth of her first child, the story of her son, Caden, had a more hopeful beginning. Rolling her eyes, she tells me about how she fell in love with Caden's father. But when he stopped working by choice and spent Kara's hard-earned income on Dr. Pepper and cigarettes, she kicked him out.
He wasn't helping out in the household. He slept all day, played video games all night. Josie, can you take Caden outside for a minute?
Yeah, come here, buddy. Let's go to the park.
Okay. I don't like talking bad about his dad in front of him. I've really tried not to do that.
Kara borrowed $300 from a friend to buy a bus ticket and sent her husband back to his mom in Texas.
That wasn't the example that I wanted my son to have as far as what a man's supposed to be. And I still feel guilty that he doesn't see his dad now, and that's the result of the decision I made. But at the same time, I know it's for the best.
What did you want to be when you were growing up? What did you imagine yourself doing?
From the time I was little bitty, I always said I wanted to be a doctor. I love my kids, but I never imagined having kids when I was little.
Kara had to put her medical ambitions on hold while she focused on providing her daughter with the care she needed. She stayed with her passion, though, finding a job at a doctor's office where she would be exposed to medical practice and make a decent paycheck. But when the doctor she was working for retired, she decided to go back to school.
It made me so nervous to think about not having a paycheck. My first and foremost priority was providing for her at that moment. Not, if I go to school for 4 years, I can provide this much better. It was always, you know, the here and now. And I think that's how a lot of people in poverty live. It's, you know, you worry about gas for that week. You worry about food for that week. You worry about how you're going to pay your rent for that month. You don't worry about, well, next year, what am I going to do? It's, you know, it's the here and now.
Right now, Josie and Caden are starting back to school, and Kara struggled to make sure they have all the supplies they need. The school they attend has a program to provide them with notebooks, pencils, whatever they need to get back to school. But the kids still need clothes.
My sister had given my daughter some new clothes that she had bought for herself that didn't fit. But I wasn't able to do that for her. And they both grow so fast. I mean, my daughter, she's almost as tall as me at 12, and she wears a women's 12 shoe. I can't keep her in shoes.
Josie and Caden know their mom struggles to keep the gas tank full, food in the fridge, and clothes on their backs. Kara wants them to know the reality of meeting their needs day to day.
But at the same time, I don't want to have to look at them and say, well, good luck. Go find something. I don't know what you're going to eat for supper tonight. You know, that's something that I worry about on my own. And I do what I have to behind the scenes and to make sure that they have food or to make sure that I can borrow the money or sell something so they have money to go on their field trip.
Kara strives to keep the burden of poverty off her children, but all that stress builds, and it helps to have someone she can relate to. She enjoyed her work at the doctor's offices, surrounded by medical professionals, but she says they were vastly different from her. At college, Kara is able to connect with other people whose struggles are similar to her own. She can study with other parents while their children play together. Her social network has turned into her support network.
My friend Kelly, she's awesome. We've become like family. We help each other out. She was off work a while back. She was in the hospital a couple months ago, and she was in the situation I'm in now. And back then, you know, I went to the hospital. I took food to her house and we'd cook supper, or I'd give her $20 for gas and cigarettes. And she came by the other day, she got paid, and she walked in my door, threw a pack of cigarettes that had $10 in it at me, and she said, love you, bye, I'll see you later. And, you know, we don't even have to ask, we just help each other.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, about 28% of adults who live below the poverty line smoke. That's 11% higher than those who live at or above poverty level. Kara expected we may wonder why people who are barely scraping by spend money on something so frivolous like cigarettes that could cost them even more money and health problems down the line.
It's a stress reliever. I figured that would be one of the questions because they are expensive. I know that. I know they're expensive. I quit with both of my pregnancies. I don't smoke in my house around my kids. But when you have little to no income, you know, you don't get the advantage of taking a vacation to relieve stress. You get your small pleasures where you can. I know a lot of people don't understand that because they think, well, even if you spend $5 every 2 days, that's still a lot of money that you could be using toward your bills or this or that. But everybody wastes money in some way, whether it's a coffee at Starbucks or eating out for lunch with their friends. I know it's not healthy and I know I need to quit, but right now that's my sanity. That and good friends. And caffeine is my sanity.
Kara, luckily, has yet to face any health problems related to cigarettes. But this last month, she had surgery on her arm, which meant she couldn't work and didn't have a paycheck. Though her scholar housing and utilities are set at $61 a month based on her income, and she draws money from KTAP, she has had to rely on her support network.
The end of last month and this month so far has been very, very rough. My grandparents, God love them. I can call them and tell my grandmother I'll get a paycheck on the 30th. Is there any way you can let me borrow my car insurance money until then? And she'll move things around and put off her bills and do what she can to help me out. And there's been a lot of times, even when I was married, that we wouldn't have made it if it hadn't been for my grandmother.
Mm-hmm. Poverty is a situation people find themselves in, but some define it more as a mindset. Kara paused when we asked her if she ever considered herself actually in poverty. She began to answer, hesitating as she searched for the right words.
I've never really looked at it as being in poverty necessarily. I've always considered myself working class just because I've always worked. I mean, yeah, technically, I've been in poverty probably most of my life. Even when I had my good job, most of my money went to pay bills anyway, and there wasn't much to live off of after that. And so we had to budget and struggle and, you know, cut out things here and there.
Though Kara may not think of herself as poor, she is excited for the day she will start work as a nurse. She works hard to keep her little family content, and her kids are full of smiles and wisdom that they've picked up from her. They don't want for much more than stability, but Kara dreams of being able to afford a vacation for her children.
We lucked into a vacation last year. We'd never been on a vacation, and my friend moved to South Carolina to Charleston, and we drove down and helped her move, and we stayed for a week while we were down there, and it was wonderful. If that hadn't happened, I wouldn't have been able to afford to take them on a vacation. So I'd like to take them on maybe a Disney cruise. I think they'd like that.
Kara is on the verge of lifting her family out of a perpetual life on the line between poverty and stability, though there are things she would change if she could.
But everybody has those things, and every decision that you make, you know, leads to where you are, and I'm pretty content with where I'm at. I mean, if I had it to do over, I guess, like I said, I would have waited to have kids where I would have had gone to school and got my degree, gotten a job, gotten a house, gotten a car. But then I might be so happy with all that, I'd never have kids, and then I'd be missing out on this. And so who's to say I'd be happier like that?
As for Kara's possibilities getting out of poverty, they look pretty good. She can stay in her low-income scholar housing and work part-time at the college as long as she attends WKCTC, where she has 2 years to finish her RN degree. She hopes to specialize in surgical nursing. We spent the last hour peeking into the lives of three people in three different stages of a poverty cycle. As you've heard, there are so many variables that impact someone's financial situation, and there's no single solution to getting out. And despite the fact that some empirical research links money to happiness, it's admirable that Kara, Angie, and Joseph find ways to be happy and optimistic in situations where the data might not be as promising. Living on the Line is a WKMS News production produced by Whitney Jones, Allison Crawford, and me, Chad Lampe. Special thanks to Rob Canning for video production, the Purchase Area Development District's Marianne Medlock, Gwen Taylor at West Kentucky Community and Technical College, and Jennifer Bryson. We also thank MIT's Amy Glassmeyer, Ron Crouch, the State Demographer of Kentucky, and Murray State Professors David Eaton and Peggy Pittman-Monk for their assistance. I'm Chad Lampe. Thanks so much for listening.